Hi, folks, and welcome to yet another Wheastworld podcast. As you can tell, you aficionados of this man's music, that background track is one of my favorites. It's called Hip Pickles. With a name like that, it deserves a story. And we got a story coming up because this is the man. This is Blue Lou Marini. And it's Blue Lou Day here at Wheastworld. Man, this guy, woof, has done everything. So many people that he's recorded with, so many stories that we're going to have to do a part two at some point. But we got into a lot of stuff today. So let's get right to it. Let's jump right in without further ado. Here is Blue Lou Marini. The audience is going nuts. Ladies and gentlemen, look, it's Lou Marini. It's my pal Blue. Blue, what's up?
Well, I'm in Madrid with the family, and my wife is from Madrid. And so yeah. I've already played 4 gigs since we've been here. We arrived on the 18th, and
wow.
5 gigs actually. So I played 3 or 4 with the Boogie Woogie piano player from Barcelona, Luis Coloma,
yeah.
And then one with my I have a band with he's a guitar player from the most famous Spanish band. It's called Los Secretos. His name is Ramon Arroyo. And then there's another singer guitarist named Jeff Espinoza. He's an American who's been living in Spain for about 40 years and has been in a bunch of famous Spanish bands. So we have a band called The Three Amigos where we all three sing. We sing 3-part harmony together, 3 baritones. It's very macho.
Nice. Well, I heard some of your singing on is that you singing on Star Maker? Is that the...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some cool stuff.
Thank you.
And, well, we are fresh off, more or less, about a month of our hang, the two of us, in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Yep.
For the Raul Jerome soiree. That was huge fun, man. What a great hang.
Yeah, it was. And what was the name of that barbecue joint we went to?
Oh, Murky Waters.
Murky Waters, yeah.
Murky. That was, like I was telling them, man, we were one set of chicken wire away from the Blues Brothers at that place.
Yeah.
It's a real deal. Well, all right, man. Well, here we are. This is the podcast, and there's Lou, or as I like to say, Professor Cerulean over here. So many Blue variations. They're easy to come up with, but... Let's get it started. This is like the actor's studio, this segment. And then we have a couple other fun segments that I'm going to surprise you with. But this first one, and we'll have to go kind of fast. This will be the Cliff Notes version because we want to get in a lot of music. And we want to try to keep the thing at about an hour. So anyway, Blue Lou begins. And I've got my notes right here. It's the Book of Lou. Born in one of the Carolinas, right?
I was born in Charleston. My dad was playing in a Navy band at the Charleston Navy Yard, and even then he was doing all the arranging for the band. So he was a vital cat, and he said it was a really good band. He said it was a lot of guys who had been in the big bands. And they were the band in Charleston for, it must have been for like 2 or 3 years. And that's where he met my mom. The band was playing at the Officers Club, and she was waitressing. She was from rural North Carolina along the coast, close to New Bern, Pamlico Sound. It's a beautiful part of the world.
Wow. And then when did you guys move to Navarre? Is that even pronounced?
Well, we were, Navarre is where the high school was, but we moved to... Dad went back to school in Alliance at Mountain Union College, and I think he was working all through. There's photos of his. He had a band with like 3 saxophones and trombone and 2 or 3 trumpets and Lou Marini Orchestra. And I think he worked every weekend that he was in college, you know. And then they moved to a little town called Beach City, Ohio, which is close to Canton, where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is, And I grew up there, and I sometimes think that it was probably the last of the innocent childhoods. It was a lovely place, you know.
Oh, that's
lovely
wonderful.
Place to grow up. Surprisingly, too, my dad was was a great teacher and saxophone.
He was your band director, right?
He was my high school band director. My first, he was hip though because he started me out on the clarinet when I was 10, and he immediately had me start playing along with records as well as learning the pedagogy of the clarinet.
Man.
So I was improvising right off the, you know, playing along with the records right off the start. And then he did something hip. As soon as he saw that I was into it, he had me study with a friend of his who was a terrific saxophone player named Frank Corby. And Frank was like a guy who didn't really read chord changes. He totally played by ear, but he played beautiful. And so I was lucky, you know. It's lucky.
Right, especially to get that... that listening mentor, somebody that's focused on memorizing, hearing, listening, improvising that way. Ah, that is fantastic. Well, we'll do the Cliff Notes version here. So at some point, you go to our shared alma mater, North Texas.
But before that, you know, a key point, I think, for me and a lot of cats, surprising number, is I went to the Stan Kenton Jazz Clinics when I was like 14 or 15. I think I went two summers. And David Sanborn and I were roommates. We both, I have a record somewhere of both of us playing solos on in John Laporta's Headband, which was all like made up charts. And at that clinic, that's where I met Don Grolnick, Michael Lawrence, Keith Jarrett was there. Randy Brecker was there. Peter Erskine, and 7 years old, was there. Tons of cats, you know, that I ended up many years later with. And the funny thing, too, is that Don Jacoby was on the faculty, and he gave a clinic in one of the afternoons. And I thought it was, and still think it was, one of the best clinics I ever heard in my life. Really inspirational. And that was when I was 15. And when I was 18, the spring of my first year at North Texas, Joe Davis, the tenor player in the 1 o'clock, was injured in a car crash and sent me in to sub for him with Don Jacoby and Bobby Burgess. And I spent the next 3 years playing six nights a week, standing between those two guys. So at the same time as I was firing away at North Texas, writing music and playing in the 1 o'clock, I was playing, standing between those guys every 2 weeks, playing a new show, backing singers, and talk about an education, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the built-in doctorate right there, man. The soul sandwich between those two cats, man. Woo!
Soul Bocadillo.
That's it. That is it. Man, oh, man. So when I promised myself, this is, I've asked you so many times, and you've always delivered spectacularly. My favorite Blue Loose story, of course, that has to do with the 1 o'clock, is the LBJ story. So,
Please. Well, I think it was the second time we were invited to the White House.
Oh, okay.
And Lady Bird Johnson took us on a personal tour of the White House, and she was lovely. And, you know, the band with Ed Sof and my old buddy Joe Randazzo and Mike Heathman, and great bunch of cats. And we ended up having tea in the Lincoln Room. And suddenly LBJ, unannounced, came in, and he was impressive, and he was charismatic.
Big, big guy.
Yeah, and I remember I remember the suit he was wearing. He was wearing a blue pinstripe suit with a vest.
Ooh.
And he gave us a really passionate address about the Great Society and the legislation that they had passed and the things that he was after. And at the end of it, he asked us if there were any questions. And there were a group, in addition to our band, there was like five kids who had won the GE College Bowl for like a month or 6 weeks in succession, that quiz show that used to be on with colleges competing. And they were from University of Texas in Austin.
Oh.
And so they started asking questions, which I thought were sort of brown nosing, you know, and I found my hand up and LBJ's.
Much to the chagrin of Leon Breed, yeah, I'm sure.
Probably. but he said, well, I don't have any, I have to get back to the governor's conference, so I'm going to have to leave, you know. But I was directly between him and the door when he said that, and I still had my hand up. And he said, okay, well, one more question, you know. And I said, well, I don't have a question, Mr. President, but I have a Texas Aggie story you might be interested in. And he said, what's that? You know, a Texas Aggie stories, for those who don't know, are like Polish jokes in the rest of the country, you know, the Polak
right.
or whatever. Yep. Politically incorrect at this point, I guess, in every zone. But at any rate, I said, you know.
Pixelated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
he said, what's that? And now this is 1968, the Vietnam War, LSD, marijuana, hippies, the whole nine yards. And I said, one of the Aggie professors asked one of the Aggies what he thought of LSD. And I remember when I said it, you could just feel this intake of breath, you know, apprehension, you know. And LBJ said, and I said, the Aggie replied, I think he's the best president we ever had. And there was a split second where I thought, oh, this is a horrible death, you know. And then LBJ caved, man. He loved it. He grabbed me around the shoulders, gave me a bone crusher handshake. Goddamn boy, you know, like one of those, you know. And he apparently immediately went down and told it at the governor's conference and substituted Republicans for Aggies, you know. Yeah, I told the president a president joke.
Right. That's one of my all-time favorite stories, man. That's greatest president ever, LSD. Oh man, I had to request that one. So how do we get using the Cliff Note system here? How do we get from, because we could go 5 hours just with like the first fourth of your resume. You've just done so many wonderful things, but let's just get a couple of them. So how about all the big bands before Blood, Sweat, and Tears, or right around that time?
Well, I went on the road with Woody Herman,
right.
But that was brief, and that was when my son was born, and I got the opportunity to go out. I shouldn't have, actually. But anyway, I played with Woody for a while, and that was with the saxophone section was Cuber and Sal Nistico and Frank Vaccari. And, I was a good sight reader in those days. But sight reading was about 2/3 of the information. They had so much nuance and so many little things they did. It was a delight, you know. And I had lots of memories from that. One night we were playing in Pittsburgh, and my Uncle Ed came down to hear me and from Ohio, you know, and with a couple of my cousins, all musicians, introduced him to Woody before the gig. And we're playing Caledonia, the last gig of the night, and I look at Woody, looks at me, and I see that he just realized that he never gave me a solo the whole night. So I had written an arrangement of Flashes, that big band chart of mine that the North Texas band played for Woody, and I had my piccolo with me. So Woody looks at me and he goes, play solo on piccolo, you know. So, you know, Sal has just played like a dozen blazing choruses of virtuosic inventiveness. And now I take over on the piccolo. And I think, I played one good chorus, but then I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. You know, it's stupid. I think I must have petered out, you know, but I remember that moment, you know,
that's hilarious.
But then I had a, you know, at that time in North Texas, there was so much work. I mean, I remember when I was a freshman playing a big concert in Dallas, backing Gladys Knight and the Pips, Smokey Robinson, and the Miracles, and the Manhattans.
Wow.
Or was probably somebody else. And during those times, a bunch of those gigs, I remember there was a Motown conductor and arranger named Gil Askey. Man, great musician. I wow. watched him like a hawk. He was so clear the way he conducted the band. His charts were so good. You know, constantly. I played the Fort Worth Rodeo. I played the.
That's a tough one.
Played the ice show out in West Texas, some Midlands.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember playing the Lipizzaner Stallions. Somewhere, you know. And then, you know, Jake got me into the recording scene in Dallas. And
nice.
I remember sometimes John Giordano, who later conducted the Fort Worth Symphony for years, was my saxophone teacher. And I remember sometimes sending in John to sub for me on gigs. I was busy, you know.
Man,
but there came a point
killing.
Where I had gotten married. And I got divorced. I was getting a divorce. I had a big band that was playing every night at a little club called the Club Village. And we packed that club every Monday night. And it was a fantastic band. It had that great lead trumpet player, Don Thomas from Dallas.
Oh, sure.
And Jake was playing. Bill Stapleton, Jim Scajari were in the trumpets. Phil Kelly was arranging for the band. I was arranging. Wayne Harrison. Great trombone player, an arranger, and Dave Zoller, the keyboard player, was playing and arranging, and we never rehearsed. We never rehearsed.
Really?
We would bring in new charts almost every week, and we would rehearse them in front of the audience. And if they broke down, then you would hear like some colorful lingo, and we would work on it. And so the audience was really invested in it. It was sort of like a workshop in a way, you know.
Well, that's cool. So they were totally hip. They understood what was going on when you'd
stop. And at the same time, Doc Severinsen was coming down to Dallas to play gigs a lot, and I was playing with him. About the time, I remember we finished the gig one night, and I was with Randazzo in the car, and I said, you know, for 2 cents, I'd leave this town and move to New York. And Joe flipped 2 pennies on the dashboard of the car. And I decided to split. I only had about $600 to my name, you know, and a wife, an ex-wife, and a four-year-old son. And I get a call from Doc Severinsen's manager. You want to join the traveling band, because he had just fired his alto saxophonist on the band. And so I had a gig, and we played a gig before I left for New York in Kansas City. And Lucha Bacon had just gotten married to Toshiko. And he said, you need a place? I'm subletting in my apartment. So before I left Dallas, I had a gig and a pad. My entree into New York, and 3 months later, I joined Blood, Sweat, and Tears. So I slid into New York pretty easy, man.
That's a comfy entrance, man.
Yeah,
that's one
it
of
was.
The best I've heard of.
Yeah.
Man. So, lucky, yeah, you mentioned, you know. It's kind of like some folks generate that cloud of good fortune and luck. I think
I remember doing a clinic with Clark Terry before I left. And I told him about moving to New York and that I was apprehensive. And Clark says, well, man, you know, New York is full of guys who were top dogs in their zone. And once they get to New York, they end up working other kind of gigs. He said, New York is where you go if you want to find out whether you really want to play or not.
Right.
He was so warm and great to me, man. And at the same time, too, I remember doing another clinic with Louis Belson, and he was the same way. So beautiful, man. What, you know, there was a little club, there was two clubs, the Club Village where I was playing, that was a nightclub that I played with Jake a couple years. And then the Club Villager was a little jazz club. But beside the Club Village, there was a little jazz club called the Fink Mink. It was owned by a bass player whose name I don't remember. But Red Garland used to play there a lot. And Bobby Burgess and I used to go and sit in and play with Red Garland. Fantastic.
Oh, man.
I didn't realize how lucky I was then, you know.
Yeah, you were around the giants. See, I would have ruined that gig because I would have constantly be saying,
block chords, Red. I need the block chords. Give me, you know, the block.
I would have got kicked out, man. But that's, man, you were around some great cats. That, well, you know, that explains a lot. You soak that stuff up. Man, that's the true education. And speaking of blood, sweat, and tears, I'm going to start the show with, I've always enjoyed your writing as much as your playing over the years. And when I got to run the band at North Texas, of course, I was programming, looking with new eyes and everything. I had to put all this stuff in because it's just some of my favorite stuff. And so the show's going to open up with Hip Pickles just because. Good. That's so. I got to know from the Blood, Sweat, and Tears thing, how did that come about, that tune and that idea?
That tune was written right after hearing Cream in concert.
Yeah. Wow.
It was my big band impression of, because the power that Three Cats had with those Marshall amps and the sound system was just, and so that's what inspired it, you know.
That makes sense as I listen to it.
You know, the way that tune, I had gotten divorced, or was in the process of getting divorced, and Randazzo and I were sharing the house that I had been in with my ex, and she had moved back up to Denton. And I was in Dallas, Mockingbird Lane, that area. And so the house had very little furniture in it, with sound system, couple of chairs and beds and a kitchen table, and that was about it. And,
wow.
And Randazzo's mom would periodically send him down care packages from Brooklyn, Italian-American, you know. And we were listening to music one night, and I got up to go get a Coca-Cola. And when I swung the Coke out, I hit it into the door, and I hit a jar of pickles. Well, Joe's mom had sent him some pickles from New York. But we also had standard supermarket pickles in the fridge. And Joe heard it, you know, and he said, "What was that?" You know, and I said, "No, it's okay. It was a jar of pickles." And he goes, "Not the Hip Pickles."
So, and history was born.
Yeah.
Not the Hip Pickles.
And so the idea that pickles could be hip, you know, that's what
there it
that
is.
Was the name. That was a no-brainer, I guess.
Oh, man. See, in many ways, I've copied and been instructed by your writing. And one of them is just an obvious a programmatic approach, is that the music is almost onomatopoetic a lot of the times, but it comes from some nugget like that. So who couldn't? You got to write your best stuff if you've got a title called Hip Pickles. That's just, you can't.
Yeah, well,
it, right?
You know, sometimes the tune comes first, or a fragment
right.
of a tune. And,
right.
And then sometimes a title, just for me, I'm an avid reader and have been my whole life. And, sometimes a phrase in a book will just like leap out at you, you know, and, wow. and I head for the piano. You know, the composing process is an interesting thing to me. There's a tune on the Italian album, the CD that we did called On Cat's Paws. And this was written a couple of years ago. My wife and I came back from our favorite sushi restaurant. I was a little buzzed, I have to admit. And I sat down at the piano, and I'm not a good piano player, but the tune just came in, bing, the whole tune in one play. And then I just wrote it down, you know. But other times it's, I have a process where I write musical ideas down as they come to me, but I also write out in longhand, the chorus with, trombones with flugelhorn lead, or try, you know, and then I end up eliminating 2/3 or 3/4 of them. And in the process of writing, I still write, transferring the, you know, with pencil on paper, and somehow
still tactile.
That will lead me sometimes. It's that process alone will lead me into something that unexpected or, you know, it's just weird how fascinating.
Well, that's always the thing I like to talk about is a composer's process, because that's the great mystery right there. But everybody has their approach. And when we get into the music in a little bit, oh my gosh, we're going to hear some really creative examples of
Of
the Bleu Ouvrier. We shall hear some amazing stuff. But I tell you what, we haven't even, maybe at the end we'll touch on SNL and Blues Brothers. We'll have to have another show, the Bleu Returns. There's so much.
Bleu Redux.
The Redux, yes. The Redaux. But we got to get into some music. But before we do, here is a new, only two other cats have done this. So have you ever seen Stephen Colbert's show?
I love Stephen Colbert.
Oh, me too.
We met him at the Kennedy Center Honors at the party afterwards and talked to him for about 15 minutes.
Is he great to hang
with? Oh, man, he's fantastic. And I wish that he would some point get in the ring with Trump and just reduce him to shreds, because his mind is like a razor, man. Yeah. We played with James on the Colbert Show.
Oh, did
James
you?
Taylor, yeah, a couple years ago.
Yeah, we haven't even touched on that. You go through all this amazing stuff, and now you're still with James, and that's
26 years now this year.
Wow, incredible.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, we're definitely going to have you back. There's just too much to talk about, and all of it is epic and great fun. But here's the new thing. So we got the Colbert questionnaire that he does to get to know somebody better. So I've come up with the Weast World Inquisition, which is similar, but it has the same context, is that this is how you get to know somebody even better. And I wish I could do this live. I got to learn how to do it so you could hear it. I'll send you you'll hear it on the finished show. Yeah, in post-production, okay. I put this unbelievable fanfare that I just made with MIDI that gets into these wacky chords and trumpets that are too high. So it is time now, and here comes the fanfare, for the Weast World Inquisition. For man, did you like the little flat five thing?
Killing.
That's some. All right. So here is number one, and you can answer these just like Colbert's thing directly, or you can take a little turn, whatever you want to do. Who is your favorite superhero? Now, this could be Marvel, it could be comic books, or it could be somebody, a person you know.
The whole superhero thing is pretty much always skated by me, even my childhood Superman, you know. But Alan Rubin, my dearly departed, brilliant trumpet-playing friend, used to have a concept. I don't know
That's
how
right.
to turn
can,
that off.
We can edit. Yeah. Post-production editing.
Yeah. I don't know how to kill the ring on this thing. Oh, I know what I can do. I can unplug it, I think.
Yeah.
No, I don't see how to do that. Here it is. Good. Stop. Alan Rubin used to have an idea for a superhero who would fly in to your window, to your office window, and take off the cape and stuff and put on a business suit and do your books and do your accounting. And his name was Superman.
Superman. Oh, I'm going to die over here.
Superman. So that's my favorite superhero, Superman.
Superman. Oh man, I love that. As always, every time I'm with the blue one, I end up with three or four killing jokes.
Superman.
Perfect. Superman. Woo! Okay then. And this one, I popped these two in just because you never know who the guests are gonna be. So this might not be a thing, or it might be a thing. What is your favorite either sports team or athlete?
Well, I've grown to be a super soccer fan. I really love watching football and Real Madrid has become my team, you know, because of my wife, yeah. Of course. She's a Madrileña. And so, yeah, I love playing. And, you know, I still, from my childhood, I still have a great fondness for the Cleveland Browns, which was our team when we were growing up, you know.
Yep.
And sure. And then since I'm a New Yorker, I'm a New York Giants fan, a suffering New York Giants fan. But and
I've been that way with the Bears forever. And yeah, well, they're having a good year.
Yeah, yeah. They narrowly missed the other night.
Oh, it was so, what a game. Oh, so close.
And favorite athlete, that would be, you know, there's probably lots of Bernie Williams. I got to hang with Bernie Williams a few times, and
wow! And you got to refresh my memory.
He was the great outfielder with New York Yankees and a great hitter.
Oh,
but he's
okay,
also
right.
A jazz guitarist and a pretty good
get
one.
Out. Wow.
And he's a sweetheart, man. I really enjoyed meeting him. Soft spoken, elegant guy, not at all pretentious in any way. You know, he was cool.
Wow.
Well, we also got to meet through Steve Tyrell, Yogi Berra.
No way.
Yeah.
Did he live up to the hype?
It was his 90th birthday or something. And we played and we got to talk to him. And that was a trip, man.
I'll bet. Oh my gosh. That's the king of the one liners that are accidentally perfect. All right. Well, we'll keep going. We got seven of these. So it's seven cues
keep going.
To heaven is what this is. All right. What is your go-to recording? No musician can say, that's my favorite record, but what's the one you just keep coming back to and it's like, God, I got to listen to it.
You know, that record, Elise and Tom, Elise Regina and Antonios Carlos Jobim,
yeah.
That record just, it always just kills me, you know, that's one that I would have to have on a desert island. And
right. That's the
and then
that'll
Miles,
your heart.
The Live at the Plug Nickel.
Woo!
That record just is thrilling. And I love Supreme.
The chances they take.
I love Supreme. Oof. Is it was just.
Did you see that thing that was out on social media a couple years ago that was Train's handwritten score for Love Supreme, and it was all mapped out? I've got it somewhere.
I'd love to see it. I just finished that book, Three Shades of Blue, by that guy Kaplan.
Oh,
do you know about it?
No.
It's about the making of Kind of Blue, and it's about Train and Miles and Bill Evans. And
oh my gosh,
it's fantastic! It's a great book.
I'll put that in the links too. People should check that one out.
Yeah, it's
great. Just got for Christmas. I got Wayne's autobiography, the Wayne Shorter one,
yeah.
Which I haven't read yet. I can't wait to check it out. Okay, so here's number four. What is streaming at the Marini Castle? What's streaming?
Well,
you guys don't watch TV.
Yeah, what we do, we are selective. You know, we're always asking our friends about what series or what things are great, you know. We like PBS Unforgotten, that series about the cold case.
That.
Oh, it's fantastic. English. And we liked Babylon Berlin. Did you watch that series?
No, I got to check that out.
Oh, it's killer.
Too.
Peter Gabriel has a cameo in it that's fantastic.
Wow.
It's about pre-Nazi, the beginning of the Nazis and police in Germany. It's
Babylon what?
Babylon Berlin. That's great.
Berlin. Wow. All right.
I like Peaky Blinders. My wife didn't like
man,
it very much.
That was the best.
But,
I love
you know, I think Breaking Bad to me is still maybe the best thing that's ever been on TV. It's unbelievable.
You know, there's a thing out written by the same cat that Deborah and I are watching called Pluribus.
Oh, I just saw ads for it. Is it good?
It's very good, man.
I'll have to check it out.
You guessing. Like, I have no idea what's going on, what kind of show it is. And it's mostly the woman. I can never think of the actor's names from Better Call Saul. I can't think of blonde.
Yeah.
And she carries the whole show. It's great. It's
okay, I'll check
absolutely
it out.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we got some good ones there to start checking out. Wow, we're enjoying the show. Number five, what is Lou Marini's favorite flavor of ice cream?
Vanilla.
Vanilla, get out. You're a straight ahead.
Well, I like vanilla with I put blueberries on it or
of course
dried cherries, which I soak in hot water to make sure that they're mellow. And I put a little the French liqueur. It's raspberry liqueur. What's the name? It comes in the bottle. It looks like a little crown.
I'm not a connoisseur. I stick with one thing and have a lot.
It'll come to me. Yeah, I you know, when it comes down to it, I like vanilla with a little chocolate sauce, maybe.
See, that's what I grew up with, vanilla with chocolate sauce. That was I loved it. All right. Here's an easy one, interesting one. Favorite season of the year, number six.
I think I like the autumn, you know.
Yep. Yeah, me too. That seems to be everybody who's taken the Inquisition has come up with autumn. There's something special.
There's, you know, the sharp change of the seasons, it used to be much sharper in my childhood. Growing up in Ohio, yeah. It seemed once October came around, man, you started feeling that bite in the air, you know.
And in Ohio, they could, because I was born in Cleveland, so my young life was there. They let you burn the leaves down by the street.
Yeah, yeah.
Woo, what a smell.
Yeah, it was, yeah. That's a nice memory. And the changing of the leaves and, you know, and in those days, you think about the summer seemed like, when you're a kid, summer seems like both a super long time. And then suddenly you're back in school, buying school clothes, seeing your buddies. And I don't know. And then that thing of approaching winter. That's one reason that, you know, to move some, like I like New York. I constantly go out with one layer too little in the cold weather and you feel like zing. And I don't know. I like it, man. You know?
Yeah, me too. I've always been a fan of the cold and now here I am in Chicago. So I get a little taste of it. Oh boy. All right. We end with something totally simple, off the cuff, very light. What is the meaning of life?
Well, you know, I like James's tune, and we don't do it every tour, but it's enjoying the passage of time. You know?
I don't know if I know that one.
Yeah, the meaning of life is enjoying the passage of time, you know?
Damn, that's
and,
profound.
I think I've been good at that my whole life, you know? James wrote a little thing. They made me an honored alumni of my high school about 7 or 8 years ago. And they invited different people to write something about me. Alan Rubin wrote something, Maureen McGovern and James, and I forget who else. But James said, Lou's lucky because he realizes he is.
Oh, man. Wow. That is really cool.
So I don't know. I think about sometimes about my. I remember my dad was sort of sardonic sometimes, you know. And one time he and my mom were talking about. My mom was hacking him about what should be on their tombstones, you know.
Right.
And Dad said, "All I need is Lou dead," you know. I just like to have dug it.
Oh, nice. Dug it. Woo. Well, that's about as deep as it gets. And we now, as Colbert would say, truly know Blue Lou, and the Inquisition has passed.
What was Mel Brooks' Torquemada? You couldn't Torquemada anything?
Torquemada. Mel Brooks, did you ever get to meet him or work with him?
No, I never met him.
Oh, you two guys together.
Love Mel Brooks, man.
Yeah, me too. Well, here we are. It's time for, I don't have a theme song for this yet, but you know what? I'll make one for this show. It's the it's time for the sampler platter.
The sampler. It's time for the sampler. bones. Here's the sampler.
In this case, the Blue Lou sampler platter, time to get into some music. And we'll talk about a couple of them, play them, and then play them and talk about them. First one, let's get a, I don't know if it's a world premiere, but it's a Weast World premiere. Your new single, tell us about the Italian project and your
new single. Well, I've done four tours with this Italian trio that I think the three of them are just wonderful players. There's a guitarist named Alessandro Chiappetta, a drummer who set it all up, named Enzo Zerilli, and a wonderful keyboard player who plays bass in the left hand and keyboard in the right. His name is Gianluca Dieno. And last February, we had just, I think we had finished a tour. And the tours with these guys in northern Italy, it's like, I remember the first one, I played 8 gigs in 9 days in 8 different cities. So, you know, in small clubs or small theaters, and we're playing all my music, except I think we play a couple tunes that Joe Beck, the quartet that I had with Joe Beck, which we called Blue Beck back then, would play a couple of tunes of Joe's. And on the CD is also a version of Here's That Rainy Day, which I'm really proud of. But this tune is called The Diamond Jig. And I wrote it for Randazzo when Randazzo passed. He had been playing in my big band, and I wanted to write a feature for him. But he passed away before we got a chance, before the recording and everything. And then he was an avid fisherman. He liked to fish for striped bass on Long Island Sound, you know. So
yeah, that's a fight.
His favorite lure was the diamond jig. And so this was inspired by Randazzo, you know.
There it is.
And I started thinking about a jig. And basically I just sort of sang the first phrase, and then the rest of it sort of came in following the,
and the project, so folks can get it. And I'll put a link.
It's going to be called, it's on the same label, La Reserve, a streaming label that put out my big band record Out of the Blue. The first single will be Diamond Jig on January 30th. And the CD itself, it'll be end of April, will be released. It's called Playtime, the name of this Playtime. And the cover is the four of us sitting on, we were playing at a school for musicians, but they had a section for little kids. And we were sitting on little kids' desks. So we thought we'd call it Playtime, you know. And it's perfect. Called Blue Lou Marini and the Italian Groovers.
The Italian Groovers. Love it, man. Well, all right, let's debut it right here. So here is the new single from the new project, Playtime. Is it called Blue Marini? Or
Blue Lou Marini and the Italian
Groovers. Blue Lou Marini and the Groovers. This is Diamond Jig.
Thank you.
Aviv Markovitz is the bass player's name.
Wow. Man, dug that. And in fact, I'm going to listen to it. beautiful. All right. So let's do another one that I wasn't planning on. But no, wait, that's the video, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to put that. Tell us about the video. It'll be in the notes underneath to check.
One of the tunes you're going to play is by this boogie-woogie piano player, Luis Coloma, that I've been working with. He's from Barcelona. And he plays terrific, and he's got a great quartet. A wonderful guitarist player named Kid Carlos, just a blues-playing killer, you know. But we for the CD, it's called We Like to Groove, we rehearsed 3 days in a row, long hours, like 5-6 hour rehearsals. Then we played 3 nights in a row at the Cafe Central in Madrid, 2 sets a night. And then we were in the studio for 3 days, long days in the studio. So 9 days straight of playing. The next day, we flew home to New York and arrived home on a Monday. And Thursday, I went in the studio with Stephen Fifke, who is a brilliant Grammy Award-winning young pianist and composer. And I had met him, he was in the band at the New School, and I did a clinic down there and played with the band. That was like 10 years ago or something. Then he was playing with Steve Tyrell at the Steve's residency at the Carlisle in New York at the hotel at the Cafe Carlisle. And Dave Mann, who had been playing with Steve, couldn't make it. So I played that gig for like a month. And I loved him. I fell in love with him both as a person and as a musician. And so like 4 days after I get back from playing nothing but boogie-woogie and blues, now I'm playing these complex tunes of Steven's and two tunes of mine. One of them is called Point of View, and that's the video that you'll feature.
That'll be the video, beautiful.
But a great drummer, I love this cat. His name is Jimmy McBride. He just plays beautiful. And Raviv Markovitz is the bass player's name. But beautiful trio. And we did the whole thing in 4 hours at Yamaha Studios in New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was really a live record, man. We just played no click track, no none of that stuff. We just we were sitting in open, just microphones, the four of us set up like a quartet.
Was this the one when we listened to your the new big band thing that we're going to feature here in a minute? Was this one of the tracks you showed me that was very improvisational?
No.
Oh, that was another thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that as well. So that'll be a link
Well, I don't know. It's a video. I'll forward you the video.
Okay, yeah. If you send it, yep. And you got to mention speaking of onomatopoetic, the boogie woogie thing, man, that cracked me up.
The boogie woogie piano player from Barcelona, you know, like
that's it. And Luis now, ladies Coloma. And gentlemen, that's hilarious. Well, we'll be checking that out. All right. So this project, I wanted to do three. So we're going to dive in quickly. This is Out of the Blue. And man, this thing is kind of like my creative Bible right now. I'm writing a project myself. And listening to this sent me down some happy paths. And
I'm glad, man. Thank you. You know, I just got a note from Bruce Fowler, my old colleague from, and I had given it to him in LA a few weeks ago. We were in for the celebration of life of Walt Fowler's wife, Michelle Ito, who passed away from ALS in September. And it was great. James came and played and with the band, and we jammed, and it was a terrific celebration. But I gave it to Bruce, and I just got a note from Bruce, a rave review. So coming from Bruce Fowler, that meant a lot to me, man.
That's huge. Yeah. That is huge, man. He is something else, Bruce. My goodness. And in the earlier days, the trombone playing just didn't get any better, ever.
No, he was he's a virtuoso.
And all that. Oh, my gosh. Well, this project, Out of the Blue, it's a virtuoso big band that you put together. I love everybody in it. But I got to start with a tune because they're all beautiful. We could feature the whole album, I think. And that's no pandering. That's just the truth. It's easy to say. listening to this thing for a long time. The first one features a solo by one of my former students, Miss Sarah Giacovino.
Oh, she studied with you? Far out.
Yeah, well, I can't claim much. I mean, we had lessons. It was mostly just, wow, Sarah, how do you do that? You know, it's pretty much what the lessons were. Although she did get scared to death of a mouse in my office. That was a good moment. But it's called Klong. And this one, what did I write? Great, unbelievable textures. Two distinct personalities, it sounded like to me, in this one. And of course, Sarah, you do the first solo, and then Sarah was so compositional in her playing. I love her playing. I love the ending. And these are my thoughts that just came right off the top.
Max Darcher, the trumpet player who was subbing that night or that day in the studio, I had heard him play with Stephen's big band, with Stephen Fifepiece big band. So I suggested that he play the Harmon Mute trumpet solo at the end. And that's the reason Walt Fowler took the summer off to be with his wife from James this last summer. And I recommended Max Darcher for the gig. And so he played for Walt this summer.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Beautiful playing and a beautiful tune. Compositionally, where did it come from?
You know, the theme of it is like a kiddie's song to me.
Yeah.
There was something that reminded me of a gamelan Balinese band, you know. So I tried to get that sort of sound in the intro. And with the muted trumpets and the whole sound.
Incredible texture. I love it.
And, you know, it just sounded, it reminded me of like hitting a bell or something like clong, you know. So that's where the title came from. And then the release into the bass line that leads into the next part of the solo. And I wanted to feature Buddy. Different things in that sort of led one to another somehow to me. Sometimes I look back at my scores and I can't figure out why I did that, you know. And Klong is sort of like that. I think that the part that Sarah plays over, that suspended piano and guitar thing, that comes from, I was just fiddling around the piano and I, that's cool, and expanded it, you know, so.
It's a great moment, and nice. It's almost like a release, a bit of a bridge or something. Yeah. I love it. And I would, you know, when we listen to this, all of these are great illustrations of what I describe you and a couple of other cats, a handful of people, as what I would call sandbox composers, where it's like a cat would just, there's no rules, but everything works beautifully. It's like, oh, I think I'm going to take this one and here, let me just put it over here and move this thing around, build a castle. Let's put a tree in the middle. And it's always surprising.
Well,
this is a great
I pay a lot of attention to continuity and but you know, things I've learned, for instance, I remember hearing Maurizio Pollini. But I remember to hear Maurizio Pollini at Carnegie Hall play Beethoven sonatas, and all by memory, you know, like it was astounding to me. But I remember at one point there was the initial statement in the tonic, then it went to like the four chord, then this long, and finally I realized you're at a point in the music where obviously he's going to go back to the original theme now, but he's so far away from it.
Yeah.
What kind of little harmonic trick, I'm thinking this while I'm listening to him, you know, is going to be, how's he going to get back to one again? And he just went blang right back to one. He didn't do anything to get back there. He just went there direct, you know. And I thought, you know, about courage in composition, you know, well, go for it, you know. Like if it seems right, then
there it is.
Yeah.
And I tell you, all your decisions seem right to me. They're quite often pleasant surprises, but it's like, yeah, of course, man. And let's take a listen. We'll see some of these decisions in action and some of this great playing. Here is from the project. Everybody go out and buy one. Don't just listen to it. You got to buy this thing. Out of the Blue Band, Lou Marini. Here's his composition. Oh. Clong.
Thank you.
And now we're back. Man, I love that ending. You sounded wonderful. And of course, Miss Sarah. She's great.
She's terrific.
Fun person. At North Texas, she's going to kill me for saying this. She had a theme song. Everybody would just come up to her and go, Sarah Giacovino, she plays the trombone. It would always be from 3-1. Anyway, okay, the next one I'm going to, that I've chosen, I have to, because this starts out with our man, the prince, the poet laureate of avant-garde loveliness, Dave Taylor himself, on Fat Man. That was such a delight to hear him do that. I know there's a story with it, and I got to ask you a question before we play it, though. I didn't hear it, and if you put it in there, that was masterfully done. Here's a blues without the four chord, it seems like. Am I right with that?
I never thought of it. You know, it's funny about Fat Man. When Joe died, I was thinking about the tune. I was going to write it for him and have a bass trombone solo, because Joe was playing bass trombone in the band, not Dave. And Dave is a close friend, of course, and has been since I got to New York. But I found lyrics that Joe had written, and Joe had very precise handwriting, a very elegant and clear handwriting. And that's the lyrics that Dave intones at the beginning, and they fit the tune.
Perfect.
That man, yeah. Tell me true, just whatever they are, you know. And
yeah.
So I wrote that tune. It must have been like 73 or 74 because I was talking to Misha Siegel in Los Angeles, my old buddy, the film composer and pianist,
great
jazz pianist.
Great recording you guys did, yeah.
And I mentioned something about Fat Man. And Misha said, oh, yeah, I remember that tune. And he sang it.
Wow.
This is like 3 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago. Between 74 and 3 years ago. And he remembered the tune. I couldn't believe it. It blew my mind.
What a mind.
But I was thinking about singing it myself with the band. And as I started to work on it, it didn't feel right to me. And and then Dave, I mentioned it to Dave, and Dave says, I have an idea. And then he sent me the bass, trombone, and voice rendering.
Oh, real? It's perfect.
And we put it on the front.
It's so Dave, just lovely. Would you mind if could I include the lyrics in some of the info here?
Or yeah, is that no, include the lyrics.
Okay, I'll put them in because folks should, I mean, it's a poem, man. It's beautiful. Without further ado, let's jump right in. From Out of the Blue, here is Fat Man.
Fat Man, tell me true exactly why you look so blue. Or is there something I can't see that makes you sad and hide your head? Mr. Fat Man, it's been said that you can look inside my head, but when another plays your game, it's not the same. You close the door. No one knows quite for sure what you mean by your smile and bright eye. Fat Man, don't be sly. Come on and look me in the eye. Or are you just too far inside to let me see just what you are? Mr. Fat Man.
Thank you.
Dave Taylor, my goodness, I could just listen to him. He's one of those guys I could listen to him recite the phone book if they had phone books anymore.
You know, that piano solo, for me, Tom Jennings, he was subbing. Kenny Asher had been playing, and Kenny had some physical problems and had to bow out. And I think Tom only made like one rehearsal. And and I love the way Buddy Williams ends the ensemble leading into the solo piano. And then when Buddy comes back in after the first phrase is just piano, the second aid is piano and the bass comes in. And then when it gets to the bridge, Buddy comes back in and leads us back into the bridge. And it's so perfect. It just, Buddy Williams is, he's an amazing cat to play with. He's just, we had a band together called Band Together. It was Larry Willis, Tom Barney, Buddy, Lou Soloff, and myself. And we played a lot in the late 70s. We used to play at Mikkel's and at 7th Avenue South a lot. It was a lot. That band was beautiful. It was really.
I can imagine. I can hear it just from the names and the characters, man. I can definitely hear that. Man, the sampler platter comes to an end. There were so many that I could have chosen for the ending, but this one really speaks to me. In many ways, this is what I'm going to listen to the most. Is You Are So Nasty. It's a great title. Very straight ahead blues, kind of the opposite of Fat Man that way, with some what I call, and then I got a quote for this, virtuoso linear writing on your part. And it reminds me of something that Ryan Truesdale told me that he heard from Gil Evans. So I guess it's third hand quote. He said that Gil said, harmony happens when two lines intersect. And I'm still trying to sort that quote out, but linear writing. Woof.
Do you know Mark Taylor? Mark, we played it at the reunion thing at North Texas a couple of years ago, where they had bands celebrating 50 years or whatever. How many years
I heard the concert. You guys played it?
Yeah, we played.
I was there. Oh, okay.
And we played it with the band from the 60s and 70s or whatever. They had
that
to combine deck. Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah, Jack was there. Yeah.
Yeah, but which was a delight. But I remember Mark came up to me. And he said, man, that ascending chromatic line, he says, I'm going to steal that right away. I'm just telling you right now. But
you got to.
You know, I was just thinking about the most simple blues underneath and on top, skating on top of the blues scale on the most remote notes, but the simplest rhythms and melodies. It just felt nasty to me, you know. It's all of it is sort of like when you get that feeling like the back of your when you bite an apple, it's too tart. That's sort of where I was thinking about it, you know.
You nailed it. It's that's like a Brookmeyer's thing of he liked to write textures that would make your teeth hurt.
And Andrew Gould, his soprano saxophone playing on this just kills me, man. He plays good.
And that was such an egalitarian move. I mean, like you gave up your solo to this cat. And, you know, when I first heard it and didn't look at the liner notes, I thought it was you. I mean, he has very soulful player. And I loved his solo as well, man. And of course, we can't forget the Stravinsky visit. He shows up. That send off killed me, man. Look at that.
Well, I love Stravinsky. Yeah, you know, when we were talking about stealing things, there's one of the many books I read about Stravinsky. Apparently, some journalist asked him about a certain composer, and said, that he's sort of famous for stealing from other composers. And Stravinsky says, listen, we all steal from one another. He said, but that guy's a kleptomaniac.
Oh, I hadn't heard that line. He sounds like he might have been hip to hang with Stravinsky.
Yeah, I think so.
I could imagine. Man, well, all right, let's check this out with a visit from the Rite of Spring and Andrew's solo and all this great stuff. Here is from Out of the Blue. Go purchase it. Here is You Are So Nasty.
Thank you.
Man, I'm with Mark on that one, man. You're going to hear my next chart. It's like, well, listen to that line. Wait a minute. I've heard. You know something that I've stolen from you a bunch of times is, I don't even know how to describe it. It's two lines that come toward each other and usually ends on tonic and minor seven right next to each other.
Yeah, I have a couple of tunes. Like there's a tune on Lou Soloff's, one of the quintet records that we did with Joe Beck on guitar and no piano, Danny Gottlieb and Mark Egan, called Don't Speak. And it goes back and forth like that, the trumpet and saxophone answering one another, and then either ending on a minor second or a major second apart, and or departing from a minor second apart. I like the bite of that. Did you ever hear the those singers from Bulgaria, that choir? What did they call them?
I don't know. I got to check it out.
Oh, it's, I'm blanking on it. Yeah, yeah. But they're a choir, and it was folk music, but they do that a lot. They sing seconds with no vibrato, just bang, real hard sound. And I remember going to hear them in New York at a concert at Lincoln Center, and I was amazed at the variety of the voices of I'll think of it, Voices of Mystère or something like that. But I remember seeing Cheech and Chong were there, the great jingle composer and writer David Horowitz. I think Maria Schreiber told me that she was there. Tons of musicians of all types, you know, came to hear them sing. Beautiful.
I have to look that up. And of course, the first place I heard it was a very formative record for me. We are about 15, 17 years apart, you and I. And so I was in just started high school when my girlfriend at that time gave me Blood, Sweat and Tears record. That Down in the Flood.
Down in the Flood, yeah.
Woo!
Down in the Flood.
That with that boat,
I just listened to that not too long ago, and I have to admit I was pretty happy with it.
That's a killing one, man, and what a great arrangement of that tune. It's the first I heard that before I heard Dylan. It was that was my introduction to that tune. Great stuff. Check out that album. Is that's New Blood, right?
I think it's New Blood. Yeah.
Yeah. What a great album, man. Oh no, I'm looking at the notes now. I was not looking forward to this part. This is where it ends. I don't want it to end, but we got to. But there's a last segment. What's coming up for Blue Lou Marini Jr.? What's coming up?
In February, I'm going to be at that club in Bern, that jazz club called Maria's.
Cool.
For a week with the boogie woogie piano player from Barcelona, with Luis Coloma and the band. And then in March, I'm doing a tour with the Italian Groovers.
Nice.
I think we start March 15th or something like that.
You heard it here first, folks.
Probably be a couple weeks. And then we start with James Taylor on April 20th. And we go April 20th to May 11th, and I go back to Italy again with the Groovers. And, I'm in the middle of a thing, babe.
Is that Miss Carmen?
That's Miss Carmen. And then James goes from mid-July. We're going to Europe. We're playing Montreux Jazz Festival. We're playing Edinburgh Castle, Cork, Ireland, Dublin.
Have a Guinness for me, lad.
Then we finish with a month in the States from September 26th from August 26th to September 27th.
Well, I'm going to look up the tour, and if it's in Chicago, man, me and Deborah are going to come out.
I'll give you some comps.
My man, well, you don't have to, but I ain't going to say no. But we will be there, man, because we love the sweet baby himself. And it'd be great to see you and everybody in that wonderful band and to get to hang. Maybe it'll be a tour date with the day off. That would be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. We can go out to eat.
Yes. Yes. We got to do it, man. There's a couple of places here in Chicago.
They got a couple.
Man, oh man. Well, as you can hear in the background, here comes Hip Pickles again. That's telling us that we're at the end of this show. What a joy. And I sure,
you know, as a trombone player, the recently deceased Ronnie Modell, who brought me out to Northern Illinois University like 5 times over a 30-year period, they were playing Hip Pickles, and I was encouraging them to take it out, you know.
Yeah.
And at one point, I looked over at two of the trombone players, and one of the guys had taken his slide off, and the other guy had two big paper cups, and he was moving them back and forth over the rods of the slide.
Oh, man.
It was no sound coming out, you know, but it was visual. It was fantastic.
See, that tune has inspired a lot of shenanigans. I know we recorded it with the 1 o'clock. I think I sent you that. I'll send you another. That was, we wrote up little vignettes in the middle of it and just went nuts.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I love that visual. Well, we shall hang again. We must.
Okay, and Blue Redux, I'm ready.
We'll do it. You'll be back, folks. In the meantime, much love to you and Carmen and Lou the Third, and continued love and success, man. All right. Thanks so much. All right. Man, was that fun or what? All these episodes are fun. I have a great time, and I hear from a lot of you that you're having a great time with this as well. Blue Lou, man, go get all his stuff. The information is down below in the video, and it's part of the description in the audio. This has been a great year, 2025. So many wonderful guests, and we started the video aspect as well. So, hey, 2026 is going to be amazing. I'm really going to be beefing this thing up, revving it up, putting the whole podcast on steroids, deluxe. And our first guest is going to be none other than the wonderful J.C. John Clayton, one of the great composers and arrangers of our music today. And unbelievable bass player and the most sweetest, wonderful cat on the planet. So many of these guys are great. John is a shining light, man. Loved by all. And we get to talk with him here coming up very soon in the next episode, starting 2026, John Clayton. We'll see and hear you then. In the meantime, be safe. Bye-bye.
WCBC Wheastworld.
Wheastworld's production of Wheastworld Productions 2025.
Man, that was... You're supposed to be talking fast. That was lame.